It's the Musical Theater Book Club. Let's talk about a show. Welcome to Musical Theater Book Club, where we talk about our favorite shows, our least favorite shows, and everything in between. I'm Berkeley.
I'm Sarah.
And today we have a special episode. It's our first interview today. We have Annalee Wright with us today. She's done a number of shows regionally and has been in Miss Saigon on Broadway and on tour. You may recognize her from TikTok. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored to be here.
Of course, of course. So we just wanted to start out with some general questions, get to know you and your journey to the stage. Like we said, you're a performer and have done a number of shows regionally, nationally, internationally, and on Broadway. When did your interest in performing begin, and where does musical theater sort of fit into that?
I always knew that I wanted to be a musical theater performer since I can remember. So I never, you know, have like a specific time in my life where I can remember being like, oh, I'm going to choose to be a performer. I was adopted. So I just remember, you know, since I could walk and talk and breathe, I was just like, oh yeah, I'm obviously just going to be on Broadway. So I had an interest in it right from the jump when I was adopted. And that was, you know, when I was younger. I spent a couple of years in the orphanage and then I was adopted and came over to America. But yeah, it was all throughout childhood. And then very long story short, I had a pretty bad, terrible high school experience because I grew up in South Carolina. So I was like the only Asian person I knew being raised by white people in a very segregated, you know, tense social, economic environment. But I dropped out of high school and homeschooled so I could just get it out of the way. And then I went straight to New York at 17, like as soon as I could. And that's when I went to school for theater. I went to Circle in the Square Theater School, which is like a 2-year conservatory. And then I just hit the ground running from there. But I was always pretty focused as far as what I was going to do and how I was going to do it since I was a kid. Yeah. Yeah. I was never really, I don't know. I was never one of those people that like had to wonder, you know, what they were interested in.
Totally.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
So on that note, also, what was your first performance? What was the first big performance you would count?
My first big performance? Like we're talking like professional level?
No, just any performance.
Oh God. I mean, I was just so hungry to perform and be, you know, any type of artist because I was just such a little weirdo as a kid. I mean, I was doing things, everything. And I always tell my students this, especially if you're in a city where there's not a lot of opportunities. I was doing like, you know, the county fair festivals and the turkey trots and the show choirs and the, you know, I mean, I really was truly doing everything from community theater to anything you can imagine. But I guess I did a lot of community theater. So that's where I learned a lot when I was a kid. And I also went to a project in the summer called the Broadway Theater Project. And that was a summer program that was pretty prestigious back in the day. I'm kind of aging myself right now, but it was run by Anne Ranking. And we had people like Frank Wildhorn and Gregory Hines and Julie Andrews come in. And so that was kind of what I lived for during the summers. And so I got introduced into that. And then I would say like my first big performance that I really count other than just community theater was when I got into my first year of theater school. I did a reading with Candor and Ebb, the writers, and of one of their original musicals. And I actually got pulled out of my first year of theater school to do that. So that to me in my brain is always what is galvanized is like, oh, that was my first big, like, that was like what I consider my first big performance, I guess, that wasn't just like, you know, for the fun of it.
God, very cool. I feel like everybody always has to answer this question at some point. What's your favorite musical? It's super basic, but I know.
Oh, it's so hard. It's so hard. I can't do favorite musical. I can do maybe a few favorite musicals.
Go for it.
Anything Jason Robert Brown,
yes.
I die for. I just never get sick of Jason Robert Brown. I also have a weird fondness for A New Brain and yeah. A weird fondness for Myths and Hymns, anything by Adam Gettle. And then my basic side is always going to be just the girl that always loved Rent because I was such a Rent head.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm kind of all over the map with that. But those are the ones that I could listen to nonstop. Yeah.
I love that so much. My first tattoo was a Rent quote. No day but today.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to have to get a Rent tattoo. I was such a Rent head. I was definitely like in high school, in theater school, like right before it left Broadway, doing the student rush tickets, literally like, you know, 3 times a week in Times Square. And then you were like right in the front row and I was sobbing every time, I'll cover you. And I was just like, this is my life. So, oh yeah, Rent, you can't beat it. You just can't beat it.
I love that.
Yeah.
So an important part of being in a musical is bringing your character to life. And that goes for everyone from leads to ensemble members. So what does that process look like for you?
Well, I think it's very dependent upon if you're working on like original material, like a workshop or a lab, you know, characters that you've never seen brought to life before, which is much more rare, but that's always fun. And that's always great. For something like Miss Saigon, it was such an intense process because you're trying to represent things historically accurately. You're also trying to take direction from the director and your interpretation of how, you know, a character might be very different than, you know, direction from creative team. So I think that process is different for everyone. And I think that also it's different depending on whether or not you come into a Broadway show as a singer, dancer, actor, or a specialist, you know, because something that I had a big realization with was understanding and realizing that, especially in Miss Saigon, it was like a dawning moment of like, oh yeah, like not everyone went to school for serious acting. So when we had these really heavy scenes that required like, you know, deep emotional vulnerability and you know, we're up there and we're in bikinis, but we're playing prostitutes, but we're also, you know, that wasn't at all normal and within people's comfort range. But, you know, me at the time years ago, it was just like, you know, what's wrong with you? Like, this is art. Like, come on, be vulnerable. But I have to remember that, like, you know, Broadway is an amalgamation of all types of artists. So some of these people, it's no shade or fault to them, but they're just gymnasts. You know, like they didn't ever spend years learning how to open up, you know, to try to be a GI that like beats women, but also, so I think that process of bringing a character to life is just a very personal, different process for everyone. And it also depends on your scene partners and the company you're working with too. Yeah.
So a part of being in a professional show is you work long hours. What do you do when you have like a 5-minute break during rehearsal, 5 or 10?
Oh, that's such a good specific question. I think that you either snack because you're ravenous. You either obsessively go over what you just learned and like run to other people and beg them to like let them film something that you might not have gotten or like make sure you got it down, you know, pee break, water break. Yeah, it's a lot about just scrambling to like get yourself ready for like moving on to the next section of the show. For me, it's usually just I'm constantly like trying to hydrate. So usually it's a run to the bathroom break. So I'm not that person being like, can I go to the bathroom even though we just had a 10? Yeah.
My shows, whenever I do shows, I always like have to have my bathroom breaks like in my plot of my show.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like, mm-hmm.
Song.
yep. Nothing worse than like being like, oh, I should have gone to the bathroom. Yep.
Right. So growing up in theater, there's these conflicting ideas that you have to be able to do it all versus being really good at one thing. So where do you stand on that?
So I think that, and this is going to be such an annoyingly ambiguous answer, but I think that you can do both, but you have to do one or the other. Meaning, I think that there are some types of people that are jacks of all trades, which is what I consider myself to be. And some people are specialists. And so a lot of times what I talk about in to my students in my TikTok videos is that's great because it means that no one should be discouraged and that everyone, there's no reason why someone can't make it to Broadway. But like for me, I was never the best singer. I was never the best dancer. I think I'm my acting is what I'm pretty most confident about, but you know, I'm not a tumbler. I'm not a trickster. So, and I have a lot of weird special skills, just like truly, like my resume is more special skills than it is shows. And that's really what has booked me a lot of things. And you can make a career off of that. You can make a career off of being pretty reliable in all areas, you know, like you'll never bomb the dance audition. You'll never bomb the singing audition. You'll never bomb the sides. You're confident, but you can also go into Broadway being a super specialist park and bark singer, you know, and, or someone that's just like, you know, a So You Think You Can Dance dancer that has like those crazy gymnastics, you know, Olympian dance skills. I just think that every path is different. What I will say is what I tell my students a lot is like, let's say you had a dancer that wanted to be on Broadway, but they were more of like a hip hop dancer. You know, they were like a B-boy say, and they could do a lot of tricks, but they couldn't really pick up choreo. They couldn't really do any ballet or anything. But I always say, you know, it's about how long you stay in the game and how long you can stay in the game mentally, healthily, and joyfully. Because if you do stay in the game, eventually your skills will be needed. So I always tell my students, don't water yourself down and spread yourself so thin that you're just mediocre at everything because you're trying to be good at everything, if that makes any sense. You know, like if you're if you're never going to be a ballet dancer, then like, there's no reason for me to tell my students at 16 years old, yeah, get really stressed out. You need to be in ballet and look how far ahead everyone else is. You need to be able to do everything. No, you don't. But there is one day, like when, you know, look at King Kong. Like I had a good friend that they needed B-boys and they needed like really athletic, different types of dancers. And it wasn't about picking up choreography. It was about being able to, and they were specialists and he made his Broadway debut doing that. So I guess the weird thing I'm always trying to say is if you're a specialist, that's great. Go where that joy is and go where that motivation and that inspiration is, because that's what's going to keep you fresh and that's what you're going to work hardest at. But, you know, in the same way, don't stress yourself out over thinking that you have to do everything, because you don't. Because I get questions from my students all the time where they're like, what if I'm not a good singer at all? Doesn't matter. What if I'm not a good dancer at all? It doesn't matter. Like, you know what I mean? There's so many different ways that you can make it that I think it's just about like kind of like following that joy and what you know that you're going to practice at, because that moment will come. Are you just willing to wait for it, you know?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't think it was vague at all.
I feel like that's such a politician answer.
As we sort of talked about, theater has been stopped right now. This is something we're all talking about. What do you think theater is going to look like when we go back to normal, whatever normal means?
Well, I think that depends a lot on if we see another uprise in cases to where we are going to have another major mandatory social distancing quarantine. Just, I know that that's going to be up in the air for a while, but I think that we will know, like, you know, by the end of this year, like whether there was another huge, huge spike and we had to kind of redo this thing all over again. But that being said, you know, regardless, I think that from now on, there's going to be a lot of changes just as far as number one, auditioning is going to be different, because I do think that digital and video submissions are going to become much more of a thing than they already were. They already were for film and television, and I was doing that for a minute and I had gotten used to that, which kind of set me up okay for the situation that we're going through now. But I'm telling my theater students now, I'm like, get more comfortable with video submissions, because that they're not going anywhere. They're truly not. So I think that's a big part of it. And I do think that we're at this point where if we zoom out, you know, I could be wrong, but I really don't think I am. We're going to see a lot more digital interaction as far as the way we do live events, whether it be remote concerts. You know, we see this on the level of TikTok already, where, you know, these young kids who have these huge followings are doing these Zoom benefit concerts where you can get the code and that's brilliant, you know, like that's truly on a very small level where I think it's going. And so even when I talk to my agents, you know, and it's about, it doesn't matter if we're still in New York and real talk right now, every agent I know and everyone I talk to in the industry, it's like, no, it doesn't right now, at least until the end of the year, it does not matter if you are in New York City right now at all. If all of a sudden things become, you know, magically great again overnight, and let's just say that Broadway shows are popping again in like December, which I don't think is going to happen, but even if that happened, then you would just fly to New York. You know what I mean? So I think that's a big thing, remote and digital submissions. And I think a lot more things are going to be collaborated from home, you know, kind of like we do Broadway HD. And I think it's going to be a lot more stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to transition a little bit. So as we mentioned, you were in the Broadway revival and the most recent national tour of Miss Saigon, as well as two regional productions. So can you talk a bit about your experience with the show?
Ooh, is there anything specific you want to know?
We do go into specifics, so I guess we could just jump into those then.
That's such a big question. yeah
like five different productions under your belt.
yeah Okay. So being in a show on Broadway and touring productions are both very different, so yes. Is there one that you prefer over the other?
I think that it's always different for every Broadway show and every experience, because everyone has their own narrative and their own version of how things play out. But for me, I often find that the national touring companies tend to be, this is so shady of me, they tend to be a little bit, sometimes quite often, more pleasant as far as the camaraderie of the cast goes. because you have that nice mixture of not only veterans and people who know what they're doing, but also you have this great energy of younger people that either didn't book the Broadway show and they're super eager to be there and they're super grateful. And a lot of times in Broadway shows, you don't have that, you know, real talk. A lot of times it's much more of people that do Broadway as just a career, and you know, high school kind of never ends in a certain way. Like I tell my kids, like, once you get into the Broadway community, it's still some of the same people getting cast. It's not like it's fair for everyone. Wipe your slate clean. Like it's, you know, you have to learn how to maneuver your energy and network. So I would say I enjoy the Broadway process of being able to live in New York and kind of have a home base. There's nothing like being in a Broadway show and then being like, I live in New York City and the sun's setting and you're gonna go get a taco before your next show. Like that's the dream. But it's also really nice to tour with a group and to see the country or to see, you know, different countries and to have that camaraderie of taking a show to a new theater every single week and you know, seeing how people adapt to that and seeing how, you know, a show, especially one as big as Miss Saigon, gets literally, you know, packed up in a trunk and rebuilt in a new city. And then you don't get to practice. It's literally just like a free for all, like hope you don't die type of thing. Like on opening night, like my favorite is always opening night on it was Tuesdays for us for over a year where it was like every Tuesday that was like opening night in a new city. And it was never not amazing to me to see how, you know, literally until like the very moment of like, okay, places. And we're getting ready to open up the scrim. There's Tom, you know, head of hardware, and he's got this huge mallet and he's just like, bang, bang. And he's like, okay, we're good to go. And it's like, we're literally still putting the set together, you know? So I think seeing the production magic of how touring works is super valuable and also just super interesting. So it's very hard to choose my favorite, but they both have their pros and cons. Yeah, for sure.
Makes sense. I feel like almost doing the touring production, you'd have a sense of, or it would almost be easier to keep it fresh somewhat because you
Yes, exactly. Because on Broadway, again, you already have like, you know, a few bitter and jaded queens in there. And then on top of that, you know, nothing's ever changing. So it's just business as usual. So for sure, that's why Tuesdays were always my favorite, because it was kind of like, for me, knowing the show, having done so many regional productions of it and having done the Broadway and then the tour, there was a certain point like years into it when I was like, okay, I mean, my mom died. And then like, I came back after a day and then like, just so many things happened. You're like, I can literally do this show no matter what. Like, I'm not saying I was going through personal things and getting drunk, but I'm just saying a lot of life happens in a couple of years. So you get to that point where you realize, oh, this show is muscle memory. So I did enjoy the aspect of keeping things fresh. And it's cool to perform in different theaters and be like, oh, this is what it's like when the audience is this close. And this is what sound is like when you're in, you know, this type of a space. Oh, and this is what it's like when the backstage has to be completely rearranged and you're no longer on stage left, you're on stage right for your quick changes and you have a different dresser. And it's like, that is the magic to me of watching these 2 hours of frantic collaboration with people that have never done this before, you know, mixing local crew with your, that was always the magic to me. So yeah, it was really cool. It's really cool. Yeah.
That's very cool. So, I mean, you clearly know Miss Saigon very well.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite moment in the show when you're performing? Is there a moment that sticks out?
It's so hard. Well, for me, because I dance captained and because I'm so into doing production, like music video stuff, and I'm into writing and I'm into being on the other side of the table and then choreography and things and producing things, my favorite moments were usually moments where I got to sit, were moments that I don't think would have been my favorite. They weren't about performing. They were more about like, oh, this is the magic that Lawrence, our director, and the lighting, because we had beautiful lighting for Saigon. And so the way they directed and the way Why God Why all came together, which is not my favorite song in the world, and it's not my favorite moment in the show, and I don't even like Chris. I don't particularly think he's a well-written character, but I do love the moment in Why God Why from our production, because I've just never seen such a great example of what simple light design and simple shadows and silhouettes and like things that the subconscious parts of production that as a theater goer you're not even aware of, like, you know, the ambient sound of crickets and a dog barking track in the background, that like it's just setting up atmosphere. And I just thought it was always such a beautifully done scene, and truly it takes you back to the power of just fundamental tools in theater, like using levels. You know, our set was very basic, but you could just rearrange. It was very much like just moving a lot of black boxes around, but instead of boxes, it was like, you know, trucks with sliders and gates and metal. But the way that the way light affects a production and the way simplicity affects a scene is beautiful. So I think Why God Why always, it took me to that place. You know, every time I watched it or I got to swing out, I was like, this is a cinematically beautiful, like, just stage show. It was beautiful. And the rest of the show was pretty, I say this in the best way, miserable and depressing to perform because it's Saigon. So it's either, oh, I just ate dumplings and now I have to put on this bikini and I have to smell good and I have to get tossed around by all these people, or I have to put on peasant clothes and go across the stage and sing, no place, no home, no hope, we will not survive. Or, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's not many parts of the show that were fun to perform. But I guess if I had to choose a performing moment, I guess it would be Heat Is On, because I guess that's the dream when you're an Asian person, girl, trying to be in the show. It's like, I want to feel sassy and put on heels, and I want to, like, I want to know that I'm a fierce Asian artist that, like, fought for this role, and you know, so yeah, there's levels and layers to it, but I don't know. It just kind of depends.
So kind of on that track and on that topic, so what does the show mean to you?
Oh, wow. For me, at the end of the day, it's a story about, are we talking about what does the show mean, or what does the show mean to me as, like, a performer in, like, my life journey?
Yeah, to you.
It was a huge, huge deal when I booked it, because it was one of my favorite shows, partly because I was like, well, that's going to be like one of the only shows I have a chance of booking, you know, growing up as an Asian person, but it changed my life. And booking it, definitely was kind of like, the penultimate of everything up until that point that I had ever dreamed of, you know, like, I didn't have necessarily the most straight, narrow, easy, obvious career to work on Broadway and to do the teaching that I do now. And the television stuff I do now, but it was pretty much everything to me when it happened, you know, to the point where after I booked it, there was a big, I don't know if, you know, you've heard people talk about the whole concept of, like, once you get to Broadway and then you're like, okay, now what? Because that's all you've ever dared to let yourself dream. You're like, okay, well, this is it. I guess there's nothing else to dream of, because I've done it. But it definitely was, I'll never go back and say that it wasn't my ultimate fantasy dream role show, self-validating moment show booking I've ever had. Cause it changed my life. It changed my life. Yeah.
Sort of along the same lines, actually, this was a good segue. I have a friend who's Asian American, and when she saw Miss Saigon for the first time, broke into tears because she's never seen so much representation on stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is it like knowing that you have that sort of effect on people as they're in the audience?
It's great. It was amazing. It's truly a weird experience to all of a sudden be in a place where you realize you're able to not only inspire others, but, you know, people that were just like, you can see themselves and someone like you on the stage. And I had that experience when I did my first regional productions of Saigon, because I had never been around Asian people and Asian performers. And you know, I don't know how I'm not going to get gritty here, but I remember doing my first production of Saigon around other Asians and being like, oh, that's what Asian bodies look like in the dressing room. You know, like having so fundamental things where I'm just like, oh, well, Asian female bodies are different. I'm not a freak. You know, now that I can be around other Asian women. So that was very interesting. And I think it was all the more important for me because I'm such a teacher when I'm not doing shows. You know, that's like my side hustle, and also like my first passion is, you know, touring and doing dance competitions and theater conventions and things like that, and acting classes. That I just felt like it heightened the stakes even more for me to not necessarily be a role model, but to push the message to people that were like me, of Asian descent or whatever, that, you know, it's possible. You know, it might not come immediately, but like I said, again, like it's about hanging in there and waiting for your moment to be patient, but also trying to help students self-realize themselves quicker, You know, like your moment is out there, but your moment is waiting for you to step into it and be ready, and it'll come when you're ready. So you can't wait till the moment comes and then decide to get ready. You have to just work on yourself and then it'll come. So yeah, it changed a lot because I felt more of a sense of responsibility for sure.
Totally.
So one of the things that has been talked about Miss Saigon is that it feels like it's really dated, even though it's only been 30 years old. So what do you think Miss Saigon has to offer a modern audience?
Well, I will say this, because there was a lot of controversy over Miss Saigon, you know, this revival and everything. And I just think it's such a multi-layered, faceted conversation. But our version of Saigon that we did with the revival and that our director steered us in the direction of going was not necessarily just to make it grittier gratuitously, but we wanted to try and portray, we didn't want to put like a happy face sticker on things. You know, we wanted to push the envelope and it didn't feel right to kind of be like, we're strippers, jazz hands. Like if we're going to be doing this material, then he wanted people that could really lean in. And I guess the best way to say it is we took especially the material with the girl prostitutes and the brothels to a place that was not necessarily pretty. So that did equal more sexual sometimes, much more sexual, and that did equal uglier and grittier. But to us, that was our way of staying true to the material and being authentic and telling the story in a more honorable way than they had originally done, where it was, you know, kind of like Asian girls, they're so hot and it's like, look at my bikini and shimmying, but then you're also not going to show the ugly side of their life where it's like, okay, but they're also literally fighting for their life, trying to get out of Vietnam. And so I that's what our production tried to offer. We got a lot of pushback but that's to be expected, you know, you can't please everyone. And I understood that, but there was a lot of pushback about it being gratuitously sexy just for the sake of shock value and things like that. But I really do think that that's what our particular production, the intention was, you know, and I always appreciated that. But that, again, that's me coming from an actor standpoint. I'm not really bristled and shocked by the concept of certain things on stage with other actors, as maybe some people might be, you know, like I come from a theater place and we did a lot of weird shit in theater school. You know, I'm used to seeing straight plays where like they go there. So for me, I appreciated that, you know, I know it was a little shocking for some, but yeah, I was about at least that intention of the reiteration of the show. I was about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, I saw it with my mom in 2017.
Yeah.
I did look in my playbill and saw you were in there.
Yeah, oh, really?
But I did see it, and my mom had no idea, like, going into the show what it was about, like, the music, sure. Any of it, and she was just blown away, not just, I mean, the production and all of the things going on stage, but just even the storyline, like, she had no idea going into it, and she was just like, oh my god, wow.
It's an interesting show to bring people to when they have no idea what it's about.
Yeah.
And you're like, suicide, murder, war, prostitutes, yes! for sure.
Part of the reason, I don't know if Sarah told you, part of the reason we were asking you is because we are, our episode, the week this is coming out, was Miss Saigon. And before we decided this, I had never listened to it. And first time I texted my friend that I mentioned, I just like turned on the overture and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. The music is truly phenomenal. Like the score, I mean, whether it be the technical elements of Morning of the Dragon or just the love songs, but you know, like Last Night of the World and Sun and Moon, like it's just, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. You know, even when I got to just hear it without the singers, without the cast, just hearing the instrumental arrangement of Sitz Probe and our musicians, it's just like you could hear something different every night where it would be like a violin solo, and it was just it's a gorgeous, gorgeous score. Yeah, like it gets me every time. It truly does.
Sort of switching gears again. Well, completely switching gears again.
Yeah, yeah.
I think probably one of the best things, it's a weird way to say best, but one of the best things to come out of this quarantine is artists have started to find all these other outlets, like TikTok, right?
Yeah.
I love your content so much. I think
thank you.
I think the I saw of you was, it was you dishing out theater tips and you had like a glass of wine in your hand and I was like, no, I need to follow her. I like knew. So what has being like a figure on TikTok been like?
It's been really therapeutic actually, because number one, I didn't realize in a weird way how much young aspiring theater students didn't know that I thought was such basic knowledge, you know, and I don't know if that was me being naive or not, but when I started just kind of making some of these videos, I was like, oh, wow, like there's a lot of, you know, kids that are really hungry for this information. And even just cultural things, like teaching them about like tipping dressers and teaching them about the tradition of what is Dollar Friday and just teaching them about what Broadway culture is like and what certain what auditions are like. So it was enlightening for me to realize kind of in a weird, I hate the way this sounds, but kind of how much I had to offer, you know, because I'm racking my brain for like, because I don't consider myself an influencer. I just consider myself like a teacher that got stuck in Corona. And so now I make videos and they're kind of therapeutic. If anything, I consider myself more of a vlogger, but I didn't realize how therapeutic it would be and how much I had just to offer. And then I also, it's been great because it's helped me do a lot of, this sounds so hippy dippy, but a lot of self-realization within myself. You know, TikTok's an interesting platform because very much in the way the world is going now, it's about your personality and your brand, you know? It's just as much about the energy and the vibe that you give off as a person and a performer as it is about like, how good do you do something, you know? So creative voice and your style of creative voice and your mood and your vibe is such a thing, especially with this Gen Z group. And I was very appreciative of that too, because I'm all about, you know, imparting mood and vibe and advice and being authentically open and having conversations about what we've struggled with. And, you know, I'm very open about that on my TikTok about just being like, I've gone through this and I'm struggling with this and I'm not a role model, but I'm trying to be an inspirer, but don't mistake me for someone that's perfect and, you know, things like that. So it's been very self-reflective for me. I think TikTok is great because we're in a place, especially now where like I did a couple of videos back where I was like, it's not the time to try to be marketable. You know, like this isn't the time when if you're an aspiring performer that you need to be like, I think we're kind of past those days of like, don't get tattoos, don't get piercings, because then you want to be able to play a lot of different roles. It's like, we're not doing that anymore. Like if anything, the people that are taking off now are the people that are living in their truth and they're finding the people that resonate with that relatability and they're strong and confident and they're being who they are unapologetically. And sure, to a certain extent, you might miss out on like that generic Tide commercial or a cruise line for Disney commercial, but that's not worth it at the sacrifice of not being authentically you. If you are a person that, you know, is a unicorn that needs to have different colored hair, or if you're, you know, like so I think it's great because I think it's just such an example of like, we're not in the time of like, be more marketable. It's like, no, be more yourself and be more unique. And I think TikTok's a great example of kids finding that and millennials finding that too. Like, my God.
And confirm, yes.
Yeah.
So the other day we saw that you had a TikTok that you answered the question about what is your dream role. And you talked about how you never really had a dream role and wanting to find your tribe. And we both thought that that was, you know, really beautiful, really speaks on the importance of theater as a community activity. So do you think that TikTok has become that tribe for theater kids right now?
Oh, I think that what I'll say is that what I love the most is when like I'll do lives and then the followers that I have will start showing up regularly and then they'll start just talking with each other. And then it's like kind of like a forum and a space for them just to all hang out, where it's like a, you know, a group hangout. So in that way, yeah, I do think it is. Like I remember I did a live a couple, I want to say like 2 months ago, where it's nice now to where I don't have to just be sitting there, because I don't know how many lives you guys watch on TikTok, but a lot of times it's just people just sitting there and then just kind of answering questions. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I don't know. Like, I just think it's interesting. But then I remember this one kid started talking about how they did an all white version of like Hairspray. And then like, so it was just, and then it became just such a, and then they were like, yeah, we got sued. And then like someone else was like, what happened? And it was just such a great moment of like, it was like a digital living group where kids were getting to like, you know, talk and relate about their different experiences doing theater. And they were giving each other advice instead of just asking me questions, because I was probably putting on like temporary tattoos and being weird and just like doing my own jivey thing. But I do think that TikTok's a great place now. And there is a space there because, you know, sometimes I think that when you are in love with musical theater or theater in general, you do forget how niche it is, if that makes any sense. Because I think there's a certain part of us that we're like, it's Broadway. Everyone knows Broadway. Of course, everyone knows musical theater. But like, no, musical theater is still a pretty niche thing if you're into it, you know. It's not something that like everyone just knows about. So I do think that it is kind of like that nice forum that's kind of being created for like a tribe and a crew and a group of and that's what I try to direct my videos towards too, is fostering that environment of like, yeah, it's not about making it, you know, it's not about getting a role, it's not about succeeding, it's just about, you know, being a version of yourself and getting to live that life where you are yourself and meeting up with other people, like I said, that are like you, that are your tribe. It's, you know, getting to exist in a certain way, not just be at a certain place is like the goal, I guess, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it totally does. In that same TikTok, you mentioned that Miss Saigon and Rent were two of your dream shows. Do you have any other ones? Any shows you're dying to work on?
I would love to do, I don't know if K-pop is, I don't know when K-pop's happening, but I did the workshop for it and I did the submissions for it supposedly coming back soon, which is where it's not coming back soon. It's not coming back like before the end of the year. But I'd love to do K-pop just because that's my kind of jam. It's edgy. It's kind of like hip-hoppy. There's all sorts of tutting and specialized stuff that I would normally not be asked to do. But old school, like I would love to just do something like, you know, Kathy in Last 5 Years. You know, like I would love to do I would love to do that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I'm totally. Yeah, like it's never been about roles for me. I really just, I would still just want to be in Rent, and I would do Last 5 Years, and maybe I would do, it's so disgusting, but maybe like Jekyll and Hyde or something.
I love Jekyll and Hyde. Yeah, I've been wanting it to be back, like revived so badly.
That's one of those scores I can still sing literally all of the weird recitative, the entire, I can sing the entire thing. I don't know why I'm so obsessed with it, but I fell in love with it. And yeah, it's a keeper. It's just so good to me.
So we've kind of talked about it a little bit, but on top of being a performer, you're also a teacher and you've really been able to showcase that side of you on TikTok. Did you ever think that teaching would be something that you would do?
Yeah, I always loved teaching. Even when I was, before I moved away from home in South Carolina, I was always like the student teacher in the dance class that would kind of also teach and then, you know, take from the actual instructors, but I teach the baby classes and, you know, in between Broadway, like I've always loved teaching and working with kids that were eager or younger adults that were eager. So I always knew that teaching would be something that I loved to do. And it's interesting because after Broadway, I loved teaching even more because I think I became more grateful for it, because real talk, I think that once I had, it was just my journey, and I just have to be honest about it. Like, I think there was a certain level of self-validation that came along with getting to a certain point in my career where then I was more confident about feeling like I had something to offer, you know, and it was easier to get teaching jobs after that. Just because you're on Broadway doesn't mean you're a good teacher. But once I had built up a certain resume, I felt like I could give myself permission to love teaching more because it wasn't me kind of doing it as a second choice thing because I wasn't able to make it to Broadway. Teaching after I did Broadway felt different because it was like, no, this is my literal choice to be here, you know, and I love it. And it felt more special in a weird way, if that makes sense, because it just felt like more of an intentional thing as opposed to like, well, I'm teaching too. It was just like, no, like I'm teaching because like I want to. So yeah. And teaching always gives back, you know, like I love teaching all day. Yeah. I really, really enjoy it.
That's something I've recently figured out. I was always like, I want to compose, do that kind of stuff. But then, you know, as a musician, there's not many jobs. And I've been teaching, and sort of like you said, that give back is so rewarding in a way. It's so nice.
Truly seeing students progress and seeing especially with theater work, a lot of it's emotional work, you know, like I do a lot of song interpretation classes, and that's been interesting because that's very difficult to do digitally. I'm still navigating that, because when you get into real song interpretation and real acting classes, it's very borderline. I don't want to say therapy, but it can be very delicate, intimate work. you know, and that relationship of trying to get students to break through certain walls and vulnerability barriers. It's very different to do digitally, and it's very hard. But when you can, those types of moments of having those breakthroughs, yeah, super rewarding, where you're just like, yes, yes, yeah.
So on your TikTok, you give your audience a perspective on industry topics that aren't normally talked about by professional actors. And I think a lot of them are so important to talk about. There's so many like unspoken things that I've never heard about before seeing your TikToks.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Did you ever have anyone like giving you tips and tricks along the way?
No. And I think that a lot of times I come from the perspective now of just being like, what are like literal things of like things that you're supposed to always just have known, but no one is going to teach you. Like whether it be the most mundane vocabulary of, this is something so stupid, but like, I remember one of the first professional shows, we had some girl being like, you know, we don't have ditty bags. So just like, you have to deal with your lawn. And I was like, I don't know what that means. So I don't know how to prepare for that. And then I was the only person that was like discarding of my show underwear and like the wrong way because I didn't know what a ditty bag meant. And like, when are you supposed to learn those types of things? Like you don't ever get set. So yeah, I never had anyone giving me tips and tricks. And I think a big thing for me too, is that like, I was always the type of personality coming into the business where I have that fake it till you make it side of me, that instead of being like, I don't know what this means, or like there's that pride thing, like asking people, you just kind of pretend you know it, you know, and then you learn along the way. And so for me, it's more like, okay, what can I teach to where like maybe in secret, you can teach it, you can learn it from me. And then you can go, and when you're introduced to this vocabulary and these things, that then you know how to handle them because you'll have at least some familiarity. Because I do, it's kind of like a nuts and bolts of music theater that you don't talk about. Like we teach you in theater how to star in a leading role once you book something on Broadway, but we don't necessarily teach you all these little small parts of like the technicalities and the culture and things like that. So yeah, it's mostly stuff like that people never taught me. And I'm like, maybe people would benefit from it in a weird way.
All right. And then our last question that we have. So you give a lot of advice on your TikTok. And, you know, as we just kind of talked about, you know, things in the industry, just tons of different things. What is the single most important piece of advice you'd want to give?
Oh, gosh, that's so hard. Okay. So I guess it would be, I'm going to try to wrap up two things into one. It's so important for me to remind my students to follow their actual authentic joy. Meaning, there's a lot of different paths to Broadway or to whatever type of fulfilling career you want. And we get really locked into this idea of there's only one way. You know, like our brains can't possibly imagine how things are going to happen. But we use that as an excuse to get discouraged. You know, half of the major gigs that I've booked and half of the breakthroughs I've had in my career have come through you know, the most unimaginable ways that you couldn't even write. And that's how a lot of gigs and bookings happen. So it's not just because you can't imagine and see how things might work out. It's not a reason to get discouraged. So that being said, I'm always telling my students, only you have to be your own spiritual referee, but only you know if you're still having fun. And only you know if you're practicing things eagerly and joyfully, or if you're just kind of going through the motions and you're getting depressed and you're getting discouraged and you're not happy. If you follow what you're interested in, then you will practice that more, and therefore you will be better at that thing. And what you are interested in and what you are passionate about is not accidental. They're like your little internal guide markers towards things that you are just going to work harder at. So I always just tell my students, be honest with yourself and know that is, you can't just only be a musical theater artist. You also have to live life. So follow your curiosities, follow the random little things like that might interest you, because following those things that might interest you are what is going to turn you into a more fully evolved artist and fully well-rounded human being. But also it's going to be what keeps you from becoming desperate and just starting to do things and run the hamster wheel and get caught in this trap of this rat race of discouragement, you know? So who knows, like maybe it's not logical for someone who's wanting to do music theater to like maybe take a little break and then go, I don't know, specialize in like trapeze or something. But if all of a sudden they realize they're really good at that and they're having a moment and like they're not doing well on auditions and like it's okay to step away and live your life and follow joy and follow eagerness and follow interests, because there's so many different paths to the same place. But you just have to, you have to follow authentic desire, if that makes any sense. You know, we get really just locked into, I gotta practice, I gotta work hard. But you also have to live life, you know, because that is when you are going to have stories to offer and stories that you want to tell, you know. I don't know, I guess that's the best way I can kind of summarize it. It's okay to take breaks. You know, you still have to be a human. You have to be honest with yourself about whether or not you're doing something joyfully or because you think you're supposed to, and doing it from a comparison point of view. And you just want to follow what you love, because what you love is what you will be the best at. Eh?
Yeah. Makes so much sense. I think that definitely sort of encompasses life in general. And I love
it. Right?
That's something I've learned recently. Like, I was working hotel and I was like, what am I doing? Like, I hate it.
Yeah.
Then I quit and full-time music director. So I get it. So yeah, you gotta do what you love.
I'm glad that made sense.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. It's been so much fun.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I love doing stuff like this, and good luck with this project. And that's awesome. And I love that we're getting more people. This is part of it. We're part of a new a moment and a generation of artists that are changing the way art's made and being talked about. And it feels good to be in it, participating in it, you know?
Yeah. So if people want to find you, where can they find you?
It's Annalie Wright. That's on my Instagram, and it's the same thing on my TikTok. It's pretty pretty standard. You know, if you type me in, you can find me. It's the same little thingy everywhere.
Way to do it.
Yes.
So much fun.
Well, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. And hang in during all the craziness, and keep making art and channeling stuff, and you know, keep the conversations going. And best of luck to you guys. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
As well, bye.